This is Danny and Dusty.
Meringutang is going to be a thing.
You're not coining anything new.
With Danny Meringue and Dusty, the Fan Man Hera.
All fellows with monkey sounds in there are called good.
The old like Danny Meringue pie.
Danny and Dusty on the Odyssey app and 1080.
Yeah, this is going to be awesome.
The Fan.
Good afternoon. Hey, welcome in, everybody. Danny and Dusty with you. Happy Monday.
Happy Monday.
How's everybody doing? You are on cloud nine. You've got draft. It is draft week. You are
I'm like a kid
in a candy store right
two
now.
Two glow sticks short of a rave.
And a lot of Molly.
I'm two glow sticks short of a rave.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. It's all hopped up on I mean, I was Jolt Cola.
Yeah, Jolt Cola. That was a hell of a thing back in the day.
Oh, yeah, it was.
My parents wouldn't let me near that. They were like, yeah, you don't need it.
I think it was about second grade. You're I went to a friend's birthday party, and I think I put down about a six-pack of that.
Really?
Yeah, I don't think I slept for the next week.
That explains a lot.
Yeah.
You know?
Right?
Get you where you are right now.
Still coming down from that caffeine high.
I'll never forget my first Red Bull.
Yeah?
Dude, it gave me wings.
So
I think I was like in eighth grade, in like Red Bull was like new, and there was a kid who had it. Shout outs, Max. He had it, and he was like, "Hey, you want one of these?" I was like, "I don't know what it is." And it was like, "It's got taurine in it." And I was like, "Oh, what's that?"
He goes, "That explains it."
No, he goes, "It's bull pee." And I was like, "I don't know if that's correct."
I don't if it want is, your life.
I kind of like the taste.
Yeah. Oh my. Didn't want to say that out loud. Yeah, what was it? What was it? Yellow dye nine?
I don't know.
Shrinks your.
Oh,
your
really? Huevos. Mountain Dew? The Mountain Dew from Mountain Dew? Yeah. Yeah.
That was the old wives' tale when we were kids.
It was before
a lot.
It was before a pop. So that's it. It was before a Pop Warner football game, and I remember just like on the kickoff, my hand was just shaking, and I was like, this isn't good. I'll never forget that day. That is ingrained in my mind.
So I just looked up the original recipe. Jolt had 70 milligrams of caffeine per 8 ounces, so 140 in a 16-ounce can. The 16-ounce can of the energy drink that I drank has 200 milligrams of caffeine. I usually drink two of these before the show.
Dang.
So 400 milligrams of caffeine. If you're ever wondering,
man,
why I'm a little jittery.
I think that the very beginning of this show where we went through all you were missing
was glow sticks.
Was glow sticks.
Yeah,
I think we know why you're jittery, bud. I think we know why we're jittery. Oh, here's a good text coming in. The Vancouver Ford text line is 503-864-6326. Surge was another one. It was, yeah, Jolt Cola.
Oh, yeah.
And then Surge came through.
Yeah.
And it was, boy.
Was that a Pepsi product?
Coca-Cola.
Was it Coke?
That was Coke. That was a Coke product because it was in every Hillsborough School District school. Because they gave us a turf field in all of our schools. They got Coke machines.
Wow.
Looking back, probably not the best thing.
Right.
We're going to look in about 40 years. We're going to have like a look back in the surge in diabetes in the greater Hillsborough area. Went through the roof, but you know what? We got turf. We had a turf field.
The diabetes wasn't the only thing that went through the roof. It was all of the students, too.
There's a lot of tea. High tea school. You know? Maybe the sports have gone down since they removed a lot of those machines. Oh, man. Yeah. Boy, that was a journey. Surge, Jolt Cola, and then they just, all the energy drinks started. And now it's a multi-billion-dollar industry.
Yeah.
The amount of money that comes out of that is just bonkers.
Yeah. Yeah. And the crazy thing about it is that they all like are built on like health food. It's like, what kind?
Yeah.
Like, what kind of health are we talking here?
No, this is organic caffeine.
Yeah. It's like, no. It's a dietary supplement.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it's a diuretic.
Yeah.
Dry out.
Oh, you're sitting there and you're like, yeah, just, you don't drink the whole thing. It's like, well, then why is the serving size like 8 servings in one can? They're like, hey, you're supposed to, it's 1 week right there.
Yeah, that's what I do is I crack it open and I let it sit for the week.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
And then you go to like,
all these bubbles.
You go to any high school or, I don't know, business place, and they're just sitting there stone cold Steve Austin in energy drinks. Like, ah! You're like, I guess he's getting his serving for 2 weeks. One just shot right there.
I like my heart to go burr.
Golly.
All right. We did have drinks that had nicotine in them overseas, though.
Say what?
Nicotine.
Oh.
Yeah.
I mean, we've changed that now. It's just like THC. You can go to a Pickles game and you can get your THC beverages there.
Yeah, let me tell you a little. The gut rot that came with those energy drinks. It was caffeine and nicotine. And it was like, whew.
Making super soldiers.
Yeah. I tell you what, man. When you found that stuff, it was the nectar of the gods, baby.
Yeah. Man, oh man. All right. Well, all right.
If I don't have at least like 400 milligrams of caffeine in me, I'm pretty useless.
See, I think I'm immune to it at this point. It just doesn't do anything for me.
No, I don't think it does anything for me, but I think it's become my nicotine.
Right, yeah. I think it's more of a placebo effect. Like, I believe it helps me, so it does.
And here's another one right here on the Vancouver Ford text line. Then they were like, well, let's just, as these kids are growing up, let's just throw it into alcohol. And you had like Four Loko, you had Sparks, you had
Tilt.
Get
tilted, baby.
Yeah, Jaeger bombs is just like
vodka, Red Bull.
Whoop.
Yep.
Oh man,
you got your body going. I don't know what to do here.
I came
up and down.
I came home from a deployment. I don't know if I've told this one before. Me and a buddy of mine went straight to Buffalo Wild Wings because it was the only place that was open.
You have a lot of stories that start with we went to Buffalo Wild Wings.
Okay, here's the thing: what's always around a military base? Buffalo Wild Wings.
I don't know. I did not know that was the answer to the question.
There is. And it's because they know their crowd. And it's a sports bar that you can like go into and get easy access to booze and food. And we went straight there and we played who can black out first on Jaeger bombs.
Boy, that game is dangerous.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, hosted by the Darwin Awards.
Yeah.
It was literally
wow.
We the bartender, we just looked at him, we just said bottle. And they just poured and just gave us Red Bull cans, and we just went ding, 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 ding on the minute.
Yeah. Well, I can see why Buffalo Wild Wings is still in business.
Yeah.
Thanks, Danny.
Yeah.
You know,
look, man. Well, they've shifted their clientele. It's not the same.
I feel like you're the guy who would go in and be like, hey. Push that overtime button. I seen the commercial. You got the overtime button. I want more.
I want more. Yeah, when you can't do anything for 6, 8, 10 months at a time, and then you're in your early 20s and you have disposable income, and you make really good choices.
Oh, man. All right.
Really good choices.
Yeah, so we've talked about this a lot, and it's something that I think that all of the universities should do, and some of them have been doing for years, but now that NIL is prevalent, financial literacy should be part of universities. I feel like it should be part of your basic training. After hearing the stories that you have told of not just you, but you and your idiot friends.
Mm-hmm.
Idiot heroes.
There you go.
Because you guys are. But you guys,
we are not the best and the brightest, contrary to what people want to tell you.
I mean, just a little bit of help, though.
Yeah.
You know, just a little bit of, like, a little bit of, hey, you may not want to hear this, but you don't have to buy a fifth wheel right now.
Mm.
You could buy, like, two later.
Yeah.
If you put this money away, because you're not using that fifth wheel when you are
deployed
when you are on base and cannot
or
leave
the
base.
Hellcat or the M3 or the Ducati.
That's right. That's right. You could buy more in a few years. Just put this money away,
The amount of money that I
think everybody
away.
Needs that. You know what?
Oh,
screw that.
God.
Not basic training. We need to roll this back to high school.
Yeah.
And whatever we have for our econ classes just needs to change. The idea of compound interest should be something that children are learning. Maybe we start in elementary school. Just plant that seed and we just start learning all the way through. You know?
Yeah.
But.
Yeah, it's a really good one.
You know, on the flip side of that, Buffalo Wild Wings may not be in business because you and your buddies.
Yeah, big
spending a whole paycheck on
big
it.
Big chicken wing is out here, you know, trying to intervene.
All right. Everybody have a good weekend.
Fantastic weekend.
Good weekend. Good. Golfed. Oh, fantastic. You golfed?
Golfed. Jalen Glenn.
Let's go.
Hey.
You went over the canyon, over the canyon, over the canyon?
Or
did you go in? How many times did you go into
no,
it?
No, I cleared it.
Yeah, all right. Issues. All three times?
Yeah, no issues.
All right. Let's go.
You'd love to see that. The first three.
That's a fun track. I like that track.
I do too. First three holes, sliced off the tee and then scrambled back.
Oh, just, yeah, all right.
Irons were working good.
Good.
Driver was a disaster.
Yep, that'll
did not,
happen.
Did
to
not
you.
Like that.
Yeah.
Greens right. Greens were inconsistent. Little spongy, a little fast in some spots, a little ooh. Slower in others. It was
yeah.
Caught me off guard, but
I like this. You're yeah. you're a real golfer now.
Oh, yeah.
You blame the greens. Then you blame your putter, and then no, eventually
it was just,
you say
hard to read.
You have a long look in the mirror and you go, I think it might be me.
Oh no, it was definitely me. It was just
but no, this is what we do.
Yeah.
It's the greens, it's the club.
No, no.
Could be me.
100% me.
Couldn't be me.
I just couldn't
stop this.
Couldn't get a good read. But
well,
yeah,
good.
No, played with a buddy and then another twosome and you know, we kept things moving.
Ooh.
Like a
yeah, just keep going.
Yeah, ready to golf.
Just keep going.
Great yeah. marshal out there too, by the way.
Good.
Good old dude.
Every yeah, that's right. Every course has to have an old retired guy
mm-hmm.
who has a few jokes holstered.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
He can read the crowd a little bit.
Yep.
Know which ones he needs to fire off
yep.
there. And then also.
Which ones to keep in the holster.
Has the, hurry up.
He
you know, you
got to
have that commanding, let's go.
Yep.
You know.
He gave off very strong prior military service vibes.
There we go. I think that, yeah. Yeah. Or, you know, or like he just had kids his whole life and was
no,
like,
no, no,
get your butt moving.
I mean,
get
haircut,
on out of here.
Shave oh, was immaculate.
That's what I'm talking
like,
about.
Man clearly gets up in straight razors every morning.
There we go. There we go.
Putting the hair on that face. I was like, you know what? That's kind of impressive.
All right. Well, glad everybody had a good weekend. Let's get the show on the road, shall we?
Fine.
Because we got to stay. Well, we have to stay a little bit on track because we got a big day. We've got a lot of news for this time of the year. We got a lot of news. It's Championship Monday.
Oh,
here we are, June 24th, and we got Championship Monday. We have a Game 7 Stanley Cup Final tonight. Me, big hockey guy,
not really,
but I have been enthralled by the Stanley Cup Final because the Edmonton Oilers, they're trying to do it. They were down 0-3.
Mm.
They're trying to erase that 0-3 hole. They're trying to bring the Stanley Cup back to Canada for the first time in over three decades.
Yeah, 1993, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're looking at 31 years.
I can think of two other reasons to root for the Oilers.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
But we got Stanley Cup Final Game 7 tonight. We have got the College World Series Game 3, Tennessee and Texas A&M. Going at it, I'm rooting for Tennessee with all of my heart now.
Ah.
And this is unfair to the young man, but you see Jeff Kent's kid is plays for A&M.
Yes.
Yeah.
Is that enough?
Go Vols.
Yeah.
I am not a Jeff Kent fan.
I don't think anybody is a fan of Jeff Kent other than perhaps Jeff Kent.
Jeff Kent loves
him
Kent.
Some Jeff Kent.
Barry Bonds, yeah. I know he's going Go Vols.
Go Vols.
Barry Bonds is all Go Vols.
Barry Bonds just makes an appearance and goes, I'm gonna go from Alabama up to the College World Series for no particular reason at all.
I am
me, huge Tennessee fan.
Go Vols. Yeah. So we got that tonight. You've got a child is attempting to make the U.S. Olympic team in Eugene tonight.
And you're not lying. Mm. Not exaggerating.
Like, this would be a tough look. We've got fun with audio of if you lose, it's going to be a tough one. Eesh. Tough pill to swallow there. So we got a lot that we need to get to. And it's draft. We got the draft smoke screens left, right,
Lord.
Center, up, down. It's everywhere.
Get the backup battery out for the phone.
Let's go.
We're
so
doing good.
Yeah,
let's
look at all the reports. There's a possibility of the Blazers drafting 84 different guys.
Mm-hmm.
This can be tough.
It's a lot.
With only 60 available drafts.
I just meant like from the field, you know.
No, they're going to draft all 84.
Yeah, they'll find a way to screw it up, too.
The NBA draft is on, and we got Kristen Peek coming up, NBA draft analyst, Yahoo Sports. She joins us at 12:30. But the draft is coming up on Wednesday. There's a lot of rumblings leading up to Wednesday's festivities, where we will be at 10 Barrel Brewing, right here in the Pearl. And a lot of these rumblings include the Portland Trailblazers. Let's parse through it next. Danny and Dusty on the Fan. The NBA draft is coming up on Wednesday. We will be live out at 10 Barrel Brewing right here in the Pearl for the 1080 The Fan draft party. You and I, Isaac and Sue, going to be broadcasting live, leading you up and through the first round of the NBA draft, which will be held this Wednesday. And the second round is on Thursday. But the rumor mill is a-churning across the NBA, and there are so many avenues that we can go down right now. From are the Spurs really going to be moving up from 4-1 to get Alex Sarr and pair him with Victor Wembanyama? To
or Risa-Shea.
The Portland Trailblazers drafting Zach Edey at 7? I think let's start there, because I saw that report and I chuckled, then I said, no, wait. Wait a minute. We can't have this out there in our orbit right now. We're a couple days away from the NBA draft. We're only two sleeps away.
Hey.
We can't be having this. That seems like the most far-fetched of the things that I have seen as of late, is the Blazers taking Purdue big man Zach Edey at 7. How much are you buying into that reporting that's coming around?
I'm not either. I will say this, and I said this on the pod with Sprague last week, but we go Friday. Edey had a very, 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 very good workout with the Portland Trailblazers. I've heard that from multiple sources. Dominated the workout. Him and Tijonson Law were the standouts in that workout, and Edey impressed.
In the six-man super workout that was a couple of weeks
ago. Yes, and that featured East Missy, Ryan Dunn, Ron Holland, Tijonson Law, and Kyshawn George. It's very hard for me to see Edey going 7, just because I don't think any team is going to touch him before probably 14. You can maybe make a case for Memphis.
And look, these are how reports manifest like this, right? Blazers have two picks in the lottery. They're at 7 and they're at 14. A guy like Edey comes in, he has a great workout in a star-studded workout with five other guys who are lottery-projected picks. Well,
not done, but
four guys that are lottery-projected picks alongside of him. The reports come out, hey, Portland really liked what they saw from Zach Edey. They are very high on him, probably higher than some other teams that are in the lottery are on Zach Edey. And immediately what will happen, you start getting that little bit of traction. Agents start getting their hooks into these things and pumping their guy up, right? Because that's their job, is to make sure that their guy has the best pub and has a lot of action around their name leading into the first round of the draft on Wednesday. And so, boom, it all of a sudden the telephone game goes from, hey, Portland was impressed with Edey,
To
oh my gosh, they're so impressed they may use the 7th pick on him.
And this is today and into tomorrow are the biggest lying season days of the NBA draft.
I think one thing that we need to look at, though, is say Blazers have two lottery picks. Mm-hmm. Their biggest hole at 7 is not going to be a backup big to play behind DeAndre Ayton. There are so many other holes that they could fill. And look, you roll the dice, you say, hey, we may really like Zach Edey. Hell, they could trade up from 14 and get into, you know, with Chicago sitting at 11, right? Mm-hmm. If Chicago's not in love with anybody, because who knows what the hell they're doing as a franchise, they could move up to 11 and say, we really like Zach Edey that much. Boom, we're going to go ahead and take Edey at 11 if he's there. You know, if we trade up. I think the priority is not to get him at 7. They need wing help.
Yeah, not only that.
And the best player available.
If you're talking about, and this has kind of been the discussion, is DeAndre Ayton the guy they want to move with at center going forward? I don't think it's necessarily one of those situations where they're done with him by any means. But I think they are looking at, and we've talked about this numerous times, they, as as a team, they're the worst screening team in the league, and they need real help there. And Edie provides that. We had Sam Vecenie on. He talked about how much Edie loves to screen. But also, Edie is not a pick-and-roll player. We went through the numbers. 600 post-ups, 60 pick-and-rolls. And most of his pick-and-rolls turned into post-ups. I don't think you're sitting there going, yeah, we're going to run our offense through Zach Edie. And there was a quote from someone anonymous that Gavoni put out there today that said they went up against Edie. It felt like going up against Shaq. And I just want to I want to take a header off a bridge because nothing feels like going against a 7'1", 400-pound man with the footwork of maybe one of the three greatest bigs of all time.
I can just throw this out there that whoever that was never played against Shaq.
Yeah. Because that, like, there's never, like, look, Edie's a big dude. 7'5", 300 pounds is no joke. To be fair, 299. But Shaq was quite literally 420 pounds. 420 pounds in L.A.
That's a big dude.
And he was playing 38 minutes a night, beating the hell out of people and getting beat on like you couldn't believe. And, he was averaging 30 and 15. Like, I don't think Zach Edey's doing that. Like, let's chill on the player comps. Is he a guy that can mash on people that are smaller than him? Yes. Does he have the conditioning and the physicality to play 30 minutes a night as a big? Yeah. Where you kind of maybe question that with Klingon. But I think it's that kind of comparison. It's a little much because Shaq had footwork like you couldn't believe and feel and body control that we've never ever seen in someone that big. Edie has great body control for somebody that big, but it's in another galaxy away from Shaq.
So we can put to bed the Zach Edie at 7 for now?
I'm pretty certain.
Until Wednesday when we collectively lose our mind?
Yeah. Look, there wouldn't be many things that would make me go, what the hell? That would legitimately make me go, what the hell?
Especially if, like, a Tijon Salon is sitting there.
Cody Williams
is that it, even held Dalton Connect. If he's even there, maybe you're sitting there and you're going, what are their needs though?
Yeah.
Where do the needs lie for Portland? And the best available to fit those needs in the immediacy is kind of where the Blazers are going to be looking at. So, let's calm that down a little bit. Let's pump the brakes on it. And then we can
lose our collective crap.
Freak out on Wednesday, right? We'll freak out on Wednesday. Mm. Let's get to Kristen Peek, Yahoo Sports.
Indeed.
NBA draft analyst. She has a mock draft out. Here we are, two sleeps away from the NBA draft, and Portland sits at 7-14. And a little bit of familiarity in her mock draft leading up to this is going to be the final one that we see from a lot of the draft analysts out there. What Kristen Peek feels is the best fits and where the Blazers will go at 7-14 in a first round kind of overview from Yahoo Sports NBA draft analyst Kristen Peek. That's after Rust with SportsCenter. Joining us now is NBA draft analyst for Yahoo Sports. She also is a contributor to Rivals as well. But she has her mock draft out right now leading up to the NBA draft just 2 days away. It's Kristen Peek joining us now. Kristen, how you doing?
I am great. I mean, it's draft week. It's my Christmas on a Wednesday. You know, most fans spend about a week or two diving into the upcoming draft class. I spend a year plus scouting, getting to know these kids. So I'm really excited. It's graduation, Christmas morning, whatever you want to call it. I love this time of year.
Okay. How do you parse through all of the information that's coming out? Like, because we have these big waves that come a few days before when you start about a week out, and then really like today is when we hear some truly wild things coming out about teams wanting to move up, you know, guys that were maybe later in the lottery moving up to the front of the lottery, and then guys who were top lottery guys moving down. How do you kind of parse through that and go with the information that you've gathered over a year plus with a lot of these prospects to here we are just 2 days out, and it seems like the narrative changes on them?
We are at the time of year where every single person I talk to, every single person that has sources within teams, talks to agents, talks to family members, whatever, every single person is going to lie to you to try to get their player, their person in a favorable position, or if you're talking to a team, they want to try to squeeze information out what you're hearing about teams that are picking before you while giving you smoke so the player that they want actually ends up falling to them. So if you know that going in, knowing that only probably 10 to 20% of whatever information you're getting out from whoever you're talking to is true, and the rest is just smoke. Because I'll tell you what, I've had several agents tell me, oh, no, he's not going past 20. He's not going past 25. Well, 40 players aren't going in the first round, and they're absolutely not going in the top 20. So which is it? Like, I don't want to hear it. Just give me realistic draft ranges for your players, please.
You just need the Maury Povich gif of, we deemed that was a lie. You could just send that out on repeat.
Kristen, it's prime lying season, and one of the big, you know, smoke signals that I guess it's coming out this morning is some of the bigger risers and bigger fallers. Zach Edey's a guy that Kevin O'Connor linked to the Trailblazers as possibly going number 7. It's not a secret that he had a great workout in Portland. I think that's the thing that a lot of people are extrapolating from. When you're looking at the guys who are the last second risers, last second fallers, who are some of the candidates you're looking at on both sides of that?
It's definitely not Zach Edey. I'm going to say that. If I'm a GM, I am not taking him, not even in the lottery, but I understand the intrigue with him at 14 to the Trailblazers. Mm-hmm. But 7, you got to be out of your mind, especially on what could possibly still be at the board there. I mean, you hear about Donovan Clinton. I think he's going to be interesting if the Hawks don't take him at 1 in terms of team fit. You know, now we're hearing the rumor, oh, the Spurs are interested in him coming in, being a twin tower with Wimby. That is smoke. They are targeting playmakers. They're targeting a ball handler with the 4th pick, either Reed Sheppard or possibly Stephon Castle. I think where the draft starts and gets interesting is at 5, right? Because they don't necessarily, if Castle falls and he's there at 5, they don't need him. But would that intrigue Portland to trade up or Memphis to trade up to try to get, you know, the second best center, the best rim protector in this draft class? So I think that's where ultimately the draft starts, is at pick number 5. I do think we're going to see those conversations with trades. I think the only team that could trade up to number 1 to Atlanta is the San Antonio Spurs, just with the draft swaps that they have from the DeJounte Murray, because Atlanta's not just going to give a player up. They're going to want future picks, because we all know what's coming up with Cooper Flagg and Ace Bailey next year, and AJ DeBonta and Cameron Boozer the following year. So that's kind of like the smoke that we're all starting to filter through. But the first pick at 7, I think, you know, the Trailblazers are in a really good spot in terms of the wings there and the upside and the playmaking, you know, around the perimeter. Because we just saw a Boston Celtics team that won playing 5 out. So you don't necessarily need that traditional 7'5", 300-pound center in Zach Edey.
With how everything is starting to line up, obviously there's a lot that's pointing at Zachary Richey at number 1. If Klingon were to go number 1, let's say there's a last second pivot and everything flips on its head, what does that do to teams' boards? Because that seems to be the thing that just sends everything into chaos. It's not Sar going 1. It's not literally anyone else going 1. But if Klingon all of a sudden goes 1, how weird do things get?
I think it gets weird in the sense where I think, you know, Klingon would go number 1 to Atlanta. 2 would probably be Alex Sarr. I think they're wanting to bring in some rim protection and versatility at 7'1". And remember, they just drafted, you know, kind of like the secondary twin of Zachary Richey and Bilal Coulibaly last year. So that would be repetitive at 2. 3 is where it gets interesting, because I think if Richey was still on the board, I think the Spurs would try to make a play at him at 3 with Houston. So that could get interesting there, just with the French connection and what he projects, you know, on the wing playing alongside Victor Wembanyama with his defensive versatility. That's where I think it could get very interesting if Donovan Klingon does go number 1. Then you're looking at it and you're like, okay, if they make a play for Richey, Reed Sheppard would fall to probably Houston if they made that swap. 5, Modest Buzelis. 6, probably Cody Williams. And then it's you to choose your own adventure. At 7, you can go Tijan Salon. You can go Ron Holland. you know, try to get some more size to play alongside the backcourt with Scoot, Anfernee, and Shane Sharp.
You know, and that's kind of something that here in Portland we're looking at. Wing help is probably the biggest upgrade that the Blazers could have at seven in this draft. And I want to get your thoughts on those guys that are in that range, whether it's Matis Bouzelas, Cody Williams, Tijon Salam, or Ron Holland. What do you see in those guys as a potential fit in Portland? And your mock that is up now at Yahoo Sports has Cody Williams, the Colorado Buffalo, going seven to Portland. Where do you see those fits in kind of what could help Portland and what they could bring to the table?
I think what's so exciting about this draft in terms of the uncertainty and lack of star power is that there is a ton of length and potential that teams are going to love getting into their door, their system, being able to, you know, kind of mold them at a very young age. I think this is one of the youngest draft classes at that position. We're looking at players that are still 18 years old, not turning 19 until July and August. So that is probably what I am most excited about this draft, and just seeing how quickly they transition, right? Because there is going to be a grace period, I think, for all three or four of those players, mm-hmm. with Matis, with Tijon, with Cody, and with Ron. And you look at their one-year body of work and just see the strides that all of them made in different sort of departments. I think Matis, it was his body. He put on 25 pounds of muscle. Ron, it was kind of like his leadership. He said, okay, this G League team sucks. I'm going to be the guy that scores. I don't care. I'm going to work through my turnovers. With Cody, he's kind of a slow burn, but his defensive upside kind of projects to a Jaden McDaniels type player. And he's farther along than his brother was as a prospect at his age. And now we're looking at Jalen Williams, who's going to be a max contract guy on a playoff team in OKC. So, and Tijon, I mean, hello, the Wimby wave. All you have to do is look at the products coming out of there and see his upside. So there are a lot of great options, I think, for that first pick at seven for the Trailblazers.
We're talking with Kristen Peek of Yahoo Sports ahead of the NBA draft. Kristen, who's this draft's Cam Johnson? Who's the one that nobody has, that a team is going to fall in love with and say, screw it, we're going to take our guy ahead of where he's mocked?
Oh, man, there could be a couple. And not necessarily like a Cam Johnson, but you know, you look at Nikola Topic, who has the partially torn ACL, mm-hmm. and I have him falling to 18 in my mock because it's been very, very hush-hush. Teams aren't letting any information leak out, whether they've met with him or not, which could be a good or bad thing. And so it would not surprise me, even though it would, if the Spurs took him at 4 or 8 and just decided just to be patient with his recovery because of what he projects after his injury. I think he's one of the best passers in this draft class, has good size at 6'6". They call him the Serbian Josh Giddey. So he is someone that I'm very, very interested to see where he falls, because he could literally go anywhere from 4, I think, to 20.
That, I don't like you saying that, because that just leads me to believe that San Antonio will suck again this year and then get the number one pick in 2025 and then be great for 25 more years. You know, they have already got Wimby. They're going to have 2 top 10 picks this year, and that just makes my heart hurt right now. So thank you for doing that. Appreciate that. Looking a little bit further down, as Portland has 2 lottery picks, 1-7 smack dab in the middle, and then obviously the pick at 14 in the back half of that lottery, what type of talent are you seeing there? I mean, we hear Zach Edey at 7 and everybody cringed, and I loved hearing that not there, but that could be, he could be in play there. Where do you see, because this is a wild draft that we don't know really what's going to happen in the front half, and it could dictate that back half of the lottery, and especially that last pick of the lottery. What kind of player do you think will be available there at 14 for Portland?
I think they're still looking at size, and whether that's Zach Edey, which, by the way, like if any team, I'm not even talking about Portland, any team that drafts Zach Edey, they need to know exactly what they're getting. And he's not going to be this starting center that you build around that anchors the defense. He's not going to be that. So he's going to be a backup center. So you're going to give a lottery guaranteed money contract to a backup center that is 7'4", 7'5", 300 pounds. You don't know what his durability is going to be in an 82-game season. There's defensive 3 seconds. He's not going to be able to camp out on the lane. He's going to be hunted in the pick and roll and runs the floor okay. But when you're looking at Scoot Henderson and Anthony Simons trying to lead the break, they're not going to wait for him to get up and down the court. So whoever drafts him has to know exactly what they're getting out of him. I'm still skeptical. Is he an option at 14? Sure. I know that there have been rumblings that Portland does like Zach Edey at 14. I would go more towards Tristan Da Silva, who I actually mocked there, bringing back, you know, bring two Colorado teammates back together. I think he has great size. He's going to be instant impact, just being a older player, 6'8", 6'9", shot the ball well as an inside out four. And he's fantastic in the pick and roll option, playing with another speedy guard in KJ Simpson this year in the Pac-12. So I think he would fit very well in Portland, as opposed to a player like Zach Edey, where you don't even know. You'd have to change the way you play to get what you want the most out of him.
Boy, you would have the Colorado connection here. Chauncey Billups as the coach. Jabari Walker is a buff. He's on the roster. You have Cody Williams, Tristan Da Silva. And, oh, by the way, the GM Joe Cronin is from?
Colorado. In the same town as Dalton Connect.
I love it.
Live a couple blocks from each other.
I love it.
Christian, we'll get you out of here on this one. The Blazers have 2 second-round picks as well, 34 and 40. And everybody wants to talk about 7-14, 7-14, 7-14. But with the way the new CBA is shaping up, the value of those second-round picks is not just growing a little bit. It's growing monumentally. And the value for teams that can have that potential four-year control on that, you know, rookie scale minimum in that range means a ton for a team like the Celtics or the Suns or the Nuggets or any of the teams that are, you know, look at themselves as competitive, but also cash strapped with the new CBA. What are you kind of hearing as far as how teams are viewing those picks in a value sense, but also the players that are being coveted there? Because in the past, it's been kind of either draft and stash or, you know, potential upswing guys where the older guys went later. Now it sounds like the older guys might be going earlier in this draft cycle.
I think what we're seeing, and this is a very good trend because this is just making basketball at every single level better, but because of NIL, you're seeing players that are electing to stay longer in college because they don't want to risk getting a two-way. They can make more money at the university through NIL. So college basketball is getting better because you're getting players there to stay longer and develop. NBA draft, the players are getting, it's getting maybe not better, but deeper. So you're getting better value in the second round than you would in years past. There still are those younger upside guys that are just like, I don't care. I hate class. I hate school. I'm going to bet on myself and enter the NBA. You're still going to have those guys. But what you're also going to get is players that are 2-, 3-, 4-year college players that are more experienced. And so I think that's a win for everyone. And also, being a 2-day draft, you're going to have teams really be able to go home after the first night and be able to look and be like, okay, I don't care who this is. Like, we are taking Adembona. If he is there at 40, we're going to take him. And we're not going to take, they're not going to feel pressure to being like, oh, well, this person fall. They're going to be able to hone in on their guy and be like, yes, this is who we want no matter what. So I think that, you know, having two.
Joining us now is NBA draft analyst for Yahoo Sports. She also is a contributor to Rivals as well. But she has her mock draft out right now leading up to the NBA draft just 2 days away. It's Kristen Peek joining us now. Kristen, how you doing?
I am great. I mean, it's draft week. It's my Christmas on a Wednesday. You know, most fans spend about a week or two diving into the upcoming draft class. I spend a year plus scouting, getting to know these kids. So I'm really excited. It's graduation, Christmas morning, whatever you want to call it. I love this time of year.
Okay. How do you parse through all of the information that's coming out? Like, because we have these big waves that come a few days before when you start about a week out, and then really like today is when we hear some truly wild things coming out about teams wanting to move up, you know, guys that were maybe later in the lottery moving up to the front of the lottery, and then guys who were top lottery guys moving down. How do you kind of parse through that and and go with the information that you've gathered over a year plus with a lot of these prospects to here we are just 2 days out, and it seems like the narrative changes on them.
We are at the time of year where every single person I talk to, every single person that has sources within teams, talks to agents, talks to family members, whatever, every single person is going to lie to you to try to get their player, their person in a favorable position. Or if you're talking to a team, they want to try to squeeze information out what you're hearing about teams that are picking before you while giving you smoke so the player that they want actually ends up falling to them. So if you know that going in, knowing that only probably 10 to 20% of whatever information you're getting out from whoever you're talking to is true, and the rest is just smoke. Because I'll tell you what, I've had several agents tell me, oh, no, he's not going past 20. He's not going past 25. Well, 40 players aren't going in the first round, and they're absolutely not going in the top 20. So which is it? Like, I don't want to hear it. Just give me realistic draft ranges for your players, please.
You just need the Maury Povich gif of, we deemed that was a lie. You could just send that out on repeat.
Kristen, it's prime lying season, and one of the big, you know, smoke signals that I guess it's coming out this morning is some of the bigger risers and bigger fallers. Zach Edey's a guy that Kevin O'Connor linked to the Trailblazers as possibly going number 7. It's not a secret that he had a great workout in Portland. I think that's the thing that a lot of people are extrapolating from. When you're looking at the guys who are the last second risers, last second fallers, who are some of the candidates you're looking at on both sides of that?
It's definitely not Zach Edey. I'm going to say that. If I'm a GM, I am not taking him, not even in the lottery, but I understand the intrigue with him at 14 to the Trailblazers. Mm-hmm. But 7, you got to be out of your mind, especially on what could possibly still be at the board there. I mean, you hear about Donovan Clinton. I think he's going to be interesting if the Hawks don't take him at 1 in terms of team fit. You know, now we're hearing the rumor, oh, the Spurs are interested in him coming in, being a twin tower with Wimby. That is smoke. They are targeting playmakers. They're targeting a ball handler with the 4th pick, either Reed Sheppard or possibly Stephon Castle. I think where the draft starts and gets interesting is at 5, right? Because they don't necessarily, if Castle falls and he's there at 5, they don't need him. But would that intrigue Portland to trade up or Memphis to trade up to try to get, you know, the second best center, the best rim protector in this draft class? So I think that's where ultimately the draft starts, is at pick number 5. I do think we're going to see those conversations with trades. I think the only team that could trade up to number 1 to Atlanta is the San Antonio Spurs, just with the draft swaps that they have from the DeJounte Murray, because Atlanta's not just going to give a player up. They're going to want future picks, because we all know what's coming up with Cooper Flagg and Ace Bailey next year, and A.J. DeBonta and Cameron Boozer the following year. So that's kind of like the smoke that we're all starting to filter through. But the first pick at 7, I think, you know, the Trailblazers are in a really good spot in terms of the wings there and the upside and the playmaking, you know, around the perimeter. Because we just saw a Boston Celtics team that won playing 5 out. So you don't necessarily need that traditional 7'5", 300-pound center in Zach Edey.
With how everything is starting to line up, obviously there's a lot that's pointing at Zachary Richey at number 1. If Klingon were to go number 1, let's say there's a last second pivot and everything flips on its head, what does that do to teams' boards? Because that seems to be the thing that just sends everything into chaos. It's not Sarr going 1. It's not literally anyone else going 1. But if Klingon all of a sudden goes 1, how weird do things get?
I think it gets weird in the sense where I think, you know, a Klingon would go number 1 to Atlanta. 2 would probably be Alex Sarr. I think they're wanting to bring in some rim protection and versatility at 7'1". And remember, they just drafted, you know, kind of like the secondary twin of Zachary Richey and Bilal Coulibaly last year. So that would be repetitive at 2. 3 is where it gets interesting, because I think if Richey was still on the board, I think the Spurs would try to make a play at him at 3 with Houston. So that could get interesting there, just with the French connection and what he projects, you know, on the wing playing alongside Victor Wembanyama with his defensive versatility. That's where I think it could get very interesting if Donovan Klingon does go number 1. then you're looking at it and you're like, okay, if they make a play for Ricochet, Reed Sheffer would fall to probably Houston if they made that swap. Five, Modest Buzelis. Six, probably Cody Williams. And then it's you to choose your own adventure at seven. You can go Tizan Salon. You can go Ron Holland. You know, try to get some more size to play alongside the backcourt with Scoot, Anfernee, and Shane Sharp.
You know, and that's kind of something that here in Portland we're looking at. Wing help is probably the biggest upgrade that the Blazers could have at seven in this draft. And I want to get your thoughts on those guys that are in that range, whether it's Modest Buzelis, Cody Williams, Tijon Salam, or Ron Holland. What do you see in those guys as a potential fit in Portland? And I, your mock that is up now at Yahoo Sports has Cody Williams, the Colorado Buffalo, going seven to Portland. Where do you see those fits in kind of what could help Portland and what they could bring to the table?
I think what's so exciting about this draft in terms of the uncertainty and lack of star power is that there is a ton of length and potential that teams are going to love getting into their door, their system, being able to, kind of mold them at a very young age. I think this is one of the youngest draft classes at that position. We're looking at players that are still 18 years old, not turning 19. Until July and August. So that is probably what I am most excited about this draft and just seeing how quickly they transition, right? Because there is going to be a grace period, I think, for all three or four of those players with Modest, with Tijon, with Cody, and with Ron. And you look at their 1 year body of work and just see the strides that all of them made in different sort of departments. I think Modest, it was his body. He put on 25 pounds of muscle. Ron, it was kind of like his leadership. He said, okay, this G League team sucks. I'm going to be the guy that scores. I don't care. I'm going to work through my turnovers. With Cody, he's kind of a slow burn, but his defensive upside kind of projects to a Jaden McDaniels type player. And he's farther along than his brother was as a prospect at his age. And now we're looking at Jalen Williams, who's going to be a max contract guy on a playoff team in OKC. So, and Tijon, I mean, hello, the Wimby wave. All you have to do is look at the products coming out of there and see his upside. So there are a lot of great options, I think, for that first pick at seven for the Trailblazers.
We're talking with Kristen Peek of Yahoo Sports ahead of the NBA draft. Kristen, who's this draft's Cam Johnson? Who's the one that nobody has, that a team is going to fall in love with and say, screw it, we're going to take our guy ahead of where he's mocked?
Oh man, there could be a couple, and not necessarily like a Cam Johnson, but you know, you look at Nikola Topic, who has the partially torn ACL, and I have him falling to 18 in my mock because it's been very, very hush hush. Teams aren't letting any information leak out whether they've met with him or not, which could be a good or a bad thing. And so it would not surprise me, even though it would, if the Spurs took him at 4 or 8. And just decided just to be patient with his recovery because of what he projects after his injury. I think he's one of the best passers in this draft class, has good size at 6'6". They call him the Serbian Josh Giddey. So he is someone that I'm very, very interested to see where he falls. Because he could literally go anywhere from 4, I think, to 20.
That I don't like you saying that because that just leads me to believe that San Antonio will suck again this year. And then get the number one pick in 2025 and then be great for 25 more years. You know, they have correct. Already got Wimby. They're going to have two top 10 picks this year. And that just makes my heart hurt right now. So thank you for doing that. Appreciate that. Looking a little bit further down, as Portland has two lottery picks, one seven smack dab in the middle, and then obviously the pick at 14 in the back half of that lottery, what type of talent are you seeing there? I mean, we hear Zach Edey at seven and everybody cringed, and I loved hearing that not there, but that could be, he could be in play there. Where do you see, because this is a wild draft that we don't know really what's going to happen in the front half, and it could dictate that back half of the lottery, and especially that last pick of the lottery. What kind of player do you think will be available there at 14 for Portland?
I think they're still looking at size and whether that's Zach Edey, which, by the way, like if any team, I'm not even talking about Portland, any team that drafts Zach Edey, they need to know exactly what they're getting. And he's not going to be this starting center that you build around that anchors the defense. He's not going to be that. So he's going to be a backup center. So you're going to give a lottery guaranteed money contract to a backup center that is 7'4", 7'5", 300 pounds. You don't know what his durability is going to be in an 82-game season. There's defensive 3 seconds. He's not going to be able to camp out in the lane. He's going to be hunted in the pick and roll and runs the floor okay. But when you're looking at Scoot Henderson and Anthony Simons trying to lead the break, they're not going to wait for him to get up and down the court. So whoever drafts him has to know exactly what they're getting out of him. I'm still skeptical. Is he an option at 14? Sure. I know that there have been rumblings that Portland does like Zach Edey at 14. I would go more towards Tristan Da Silva, who I actually mocked there, bringing back, you know, bring two Colorado teammates back together. I think he has great size. He's going to be instant impact just being a older player, 6'8", 6'9", shot the ball well as an inside out four. And he's fantastic in the pick and roll option, playing with another speedy guard in KJ Simpson this year in the Pac-12. So I think he would fit very well in Portland, as opposed to a player like Zach Edey, where you don't even know. You'd have to change the way you play to get what you want the most out of him.
Boy, you would have the Colorado connection here. Chauncey Billups as the coach. Jabari Walker is a buff. He's on the roster. Mm-hmm. You have Cody Williams, Tristan Da Silva. And, oh, by the way, the GM Joe Cronin is from?
Colorado. In the same town as Dalton Connect.
I love it.
Live a couple blocks from each other.
I love it.
Christian, we'll get you out of here on this one. The Blazers have 2 second-round picks as well, 34 and 40. And everybody wants to talk about 7-14, 7-14, 7-14. But with the way the new CBA is shaping up, the value of those second-round picks is not just growing a little bit. It's growing monumentally. And the value for teams that can have that potential four-year control on that, you know, rookie scale minimum in that range means a ton for a team like the Celtics or the Suns or the Nuggets or any of the teams that are, you know, look at themselves as competitive, but also cash strapped with the new CBA. What are you kind of hearing as far as how teams are viewing those picks in a value sense, but also the players that are being coveted there? Because in the past, it's been kind of either draft and stash or, you know, potential upswing guys where the older guys went later. Now it sounds like the older guys might be going earlier in this draft cycle.
I think what we're seeing, and this is a very good trend because this is just making basketball at every single level better, but because of NIL, you're seeing players that are electing to stay longer in college because they don't want to risk getting a two-way. They can make more money at the university through NIL. So college basketball is getting better because you're getting players there to stay longer and develop. NBA draft, the players are getting, it's getting maybe not better, but deeper. So you're getting better value in the second round than you would in years past. There still are those younger upside guys that are just like, I don't care. I hate class. I hate school. I'm going to bet on myself and enter the NBA. You're still going to have those guys. But what you're also going to get is players that are 2-3-4 year college players that are more experienced. And so I think that's a win for everyone. And also being a 2-day draft, you're going to have teams really be able to go home after the first night and be able to look and be like, okay, I don't care who this is. Like, we are taking Adembona. If he is there at 40, we're going to take him. And they're not going to feel pressure to being like, oh, well, this person fall. They're going to be able to hone in on their guy and be like, yes, this is who we want no matter what. So I think that, you know, having two second round picks in this draft in particular is very, very valuable for Portland and for any other team there in the second round.
Kristen, we appreciate your time, not just because of how busy this week is, but the insight that you gave us as well. We really appreciate your time. Thank you so much. Go check out her mock draft. It is the latest one up at Yahoo Sports right now. It's Kristen Peek. Thank you for the time.
Thanks, guys. Have a good one.
Thanks, KP.
I think that kind of calms a lot of the nerves of Blazer fans that are out there. We talked about this at 12:15 with the fact that the ED rumblings at 7, they come up, and it's like, no, Portland knows where their weaknesses lie right now.
And not only that, they understand where mocks are. And like, look, there's a I understand, like, go get your guy. there's that, but there has to be a point where the value scaling makes sense. It's unfortunately, I was a fan of a team in the Raiders that decided they were smarter than everybody else in the room and went out and got guys like Alex Leatherwood and Colin Farrell way ahead of where they were mocked and spent capital that they didn't need to spend when they did. Yeah. And that came back and bit them in the butt. And that's the same thing. It's true across sports. And yes, the NFL is deeper, obviously, more, you know, more roster slots and everything else like that. And maybe you can do that in later spots. But in the premium positions, particularly in the lottery, you got to be careful with that spot, because if you get burned, like, it's one thing to get burned and, you know, you made a swing that's, God, I hate giving this credit. Ryan Russillo on with Bill Simmons said, there's a great Neil Olshey line, and it's a great line, so I'm going to give it to him. Mock drafts would look, or NBA drafts would look a lot different if mock drafts didn't exist, because consensus forms around stuff. And there's truth to that, for sure. But there's also, like, there is no mock trade simulator around Alex Caruso for Josh Giddey, and we're all sitting there going, at the Bulls right now. So there's levels to, like, what the hell are you doing?
And the mocks just don't come out of thin air.
No. And they're especially the one at ESPN where Will and Givenier and KP are getting real intel directly from teams.
All right, let's get a lot of the feedback here, because there's two spots that you and I have talked about ad nauseum throughout this draft process. Help through the entirety of the Blazer season. It's at the 3 mm-hmm. and at the 4. The Blazers need to find that. There's a lot of feedback coming in on the Vancouver Ford text line and in the YouTube chat. We'll get to that next. Danny and Dusty on the Fan. It's Bull Pee. All right, Kristen Peek, Yahoo Sports. She just joined us. She's got a mock draft up. She's got Cody Williams of University of Colorado going to Portland at 7. And Tristan Da Silva of Colorado at 14 going to the Portland Trailblazers. Mm-hmm. The Colorado connection there. Some of the feedback that we're getting. Kirk on the YouTube chat, Kirk Royce, he's big on... They need a power forward in this draft. And that is obvious. Portland, at the 3 and the 4 spots, they need help.
Yep.
That, and there's no secret there. Jeremy Grant is a very good 4.
Yes.
But,
and we'll talk about probably the teams checking in on Jeremy at some point.
Yeah, the Dallas Mavericks, that came up. And it's just
more,
like,
than that.
But that one was the big one over the weekend, where Mark Stein even was like, well, they're checking in to see if he's available. Well, yeah, he's a really good player.
And his deal's...
in a rebuilding team, yeah.
And his deal's entirely fine. I remember when everybody's freaking out about that.
Everybody's kicking the tires on him, and they should. But the 3 and the 4 are where Portland will try to target in this draft. And I think Cody Williams, 6'8", what, buck 95. And you're looking at Tristan Da Silva, 6'9".
Yeah.
You know, both of them slender fellers. But Cody Williams, his brother is 6'5", playing the 4 for the...
No, I mean, he plays more 3 than anything else, but 2-3. But he's a guy who put on a ton of weight.
But he's listed as their power forward in Oklahoma City, where they're going smaller, obviously. And it's going to be smaller with Caruso in that lineup, too. But you're sitting there and you can say both of those guys could fit if Portland wants to play that downhill attack and have slashers on the outside with Da Silva or Cody Williams.
And that's the thing. Da Silva is a guy that I really like. I was talking to a scout last night, a bunch of them last night, about pick 14. And just about everyone I talked to was like, I'd love Da Silva to land in Portland. Like, it's a good fit. And the Jaime Jaquez thing is the thing that comes out all the time. Like, he's going to start playing and he's going to go out there and people are going to go, how did he fall to 14? You know, full Jerry Seinfeld. And it's going to be like, yeah, he's a good player. That's what good players do. And then all of a sudden, you know, people are like, well, you know, that's the thing is, like,
we just can't let him slip to 15 to Miami.
Yeah. Although, funny enough, that is a landing spot that I've heard about for Edie.
Oh.
And which is weird, because they're talking about, well, they can protect Bam by moving him to the power forward and they can get bigger. And I'm like, so Bam's going to shoot mid-ranges only and maybe take a couple of threes, and Edie's going to play exclusively at the rim? Like, that seems like spacing hell, but sure, go for it, Miami. I'm all for it. But as far as Da Silva goes, like, I'd love him at 14. There's very few players where I'd be like, if the Blazers came out with Kristen Peek's draft, I would be very happy in the press conference following the first round.
So it wouldn't be Kevin Pritchard's farewell where he took two guys from the same school and Luke Babbitt and Armand Johnson.
Yeah, it's a little tough.
From Nevada, Reno. We're upgrading that. To Colorado.
We're just moving a little northeast and calling it good. It is a little weird to take, you know, two players off like the third best team in the Pac-12.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I've talked to a lot of folks as far as it pertains to Cody Williams, and the thing that I have been told as far as like his injury and him playing in the second half of his season kind of a deal is that, and maybe this is bias and this is shifting towards the draft and trying to lifting his stock, but he should not have been playing. He should not have been playing on the ankle that he injured. Like it just wasn't a thing that he should have done, but he did instead. And he was playing with a nasal fracture on top of that, which, you know, after getting hit in the face, it's a difficult thing to battle back from.
I feel like playing at altitude with a broken nose and having problems breathing would be
problematic,
exacerbated a little bit.
Yeah,
you know,
but like that stupid mask on
would not be fun. Like nothing about that seems like it would be a good time.
Sounds like a particular sort of hell.
We're not having a good time. All right, we have PG and Bob. They are both in the comments along with Brandon. I want to get to some of these too because we're seeing a lot of movement, not just about agents propping their players up in the draft conversations and getting reports out there. We're also seeing a lot of trade reports, and the Blazers are at the center of a ton of them, whether it is Jeremy Grant, whether it is Malcolm Brogdon. I think this is only going to intensify over the next 2 days as well. What is the likelihood that we see Portland making a move on the trade market as well? Danny and Dusty on the Fan. Bull P. All right, Kristen Peek, Yahoo Sports. She just joined us. She's got a mock draft up. She's got Cody Williams of University of Colorado going to Portland at 7. And Tristan Da Silva of Colorado at 14 going to the Portland Trailblazers. Mm-hmm. The Colorado connection there. Some of the feedback that we're getting. Kirk on the YouTube chat, Kirk Royce, he's big on... They need a power forward in this draft. And that is obvious. Portland, at the 3 and 4 spots, they need help.
Yep.
And there's no secret there. Jeremy Grant is a very good 4.
Yes.
But
and we'll talk about probably the teams checking in on Jeremy at some point.
Yeah, the Dallas Mavericks, that came up. And it's just like,
more than that.
But that one was the big one over the weekend where Mark Stein even was like, well, they're checking in to see if he's available. Well, yeah, he's a really good player.
And his deal's...
In a rebuilding team, yeah.
And his deal's entirely fine. I remember when everybody's freaking out about that.
Everybody's kicking the tires on him, and they should. But the 3 and 4 are where Portland will try to target in this draft. And I think Cody Williams, 6'8", 195. And you're looking at Tristan Da Silva, 6'9".
Yeah.
You know, both of them slender fellers. But Cody Williams, his brother is 6'5", playing the 4 for the...
No, I mean, he plays more 3 than anything else, but 2-3. But he's a guy who put on a ton of weight.
But he's listed as their power forward in Oklahoma City, where they're going smaller, obviously. And it's going to be smaller with Caruso in that lineup, too. But you're sitting there and you can say both of those guys could fit if Portland wants to play that downhill attack and have slashers on the outside with Da Silva or Cody Williams.
And that's the thing. Da Silva's a guy that I really like. I was talking to a scout last night, a bunch of them last night, about pick 14. And just about everyone I talked to was like, I'd love Da Silva to land in Portland. Like, it's a good fit. And the Jaime Jaquez thing is the thing that comes out all the time. Like, he's going to start playing and he's going to go out there and people are going to go, how did he fall to 14? You know, full Jerry Seinfeld. And it's going to be like, yeah, he's a good player. That's what good players do. And then all of a sudden, you know, people are like, well, you know, that's the thing is like,
we just can't let him slip to 15 to Miami.
Yeah. Although, funny enough, that is a landing spot that I've heard about for Edie.
Oh.
And which is weird because they're talking about, well, they can protect Bam by moving him to the power forward and they can get bigger. I'm like, so Bam's going to shoot mid-ranges only and maybe take a couple threes and Edie's going to play exclusively at the rim? Like, that seems like spacing hell, but sure, go for it, Miami. I'm all for it. But as far as Da Silva goes, like, I'd love him at 14. There's very few players where I'd be like, if the Blazers came out with Christian Peake's draft, I would be very happy in the press conference following the first round.
So it wouldn't be Kevin Pritchard's farewell where he took two guys from the same school and Luke Babbitt and Armand Johnson.
Yeah, it's a little tough.
From Nevada, Reno. So, we're upgrading that. To Colorado.
We're just moving a little northeast and calling it good. It is a little weird to take, you know, two players off like the third best team in the Pac-12.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
I've talked to a lot of folks as far as it pertains to Cody Williams, and the thing that I have been told as far as like his injury and him playing in the second half of his season kind of a deal is that, and maybe this is bias and this is shifting towards the draft and trying to lifting his stock, but he should not have been playing. He should not have been playing on the ankle that he injured. Like it just wasn't a thing that he should have done, but he did instead. And he was playing with a nasal fracture on top of that, which, you know, after getting hit in the face, it's a difficult thing to battle back from.
I feel like playing at altitude with a broken nose and having problems breathing would be
problematic,
exacerbated a little bit.
Yeah,
you know,
but like that stupid mask on
would not be fun. Like nothing about that seems like it would be a good time.
Sounds like a particular sort of hell.
We're not having a good time. All right, we have PG and Bob. They are both in the comments along with Brandon. I want to get to some of these too because we're seeing a lot of movement, not just about agents propping their players up in the draft conversations and getting reports out there. We're also seeing a lot of trade reports, and the Blazers are at the center of a ton of them, whether it is Jeremy Grant, whether it is Malcolm Brogdon. I think this is only going to intensify over the next 2 days as well. What is the likelihood that we see Portland making a move on the trade market as well? Danny and Dusty on the Fan.